Welcome to Tech Stack. Today, we're talking about the hottest companies in AI that's driving the whole wave that's going to change society going forward. I'm Jim McGregor, Principal Analyst here at Tyrus Research, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleagues, Mark Vina, the CEO and Principal Analyst at Smart Tech Research, Dave Altavilla, Principal Analyst at Hot Tech, and Mark Gepetta, Principal Analyst at Hot Tech. Thank you for joining us today.
Good to see you again, James.
Guys. Yes, great. Guys, this is the great topic. I mean, we all think of that NVIDIA all the time when we think of AI. They're really driving, you know, a lot of innovation. Matter of fact, you know, we went from innovation on GPUs for every 2 to 3 years to now innovation on AI that's happening every month, every couple of months. But NVIDIA is not the only company. We're talking about a whole ecosystem here today. So, I mean, let's really dive in and talk about, you know, the top two or three companies that you think are really going to drive this. Dave, let's start it off with you. Who do you think, who's your pick to really drive AI?
You know, it's interesting, Jim. You know, AI is, you know, on the lips of everybody's mouth in our world these days. You just can't have a meeting without speaking about the topic because it is so transformational. It's like, you know, the invention of the telephone, or, you know, certainly the internet, or maybe even an electricity moment, if you will, Edison moment. It's going to reshape the landscape so dramatically. But there are lots of players beyond NVIDIA. Obviously, they're the 800-pound gorilla that is, you know, just driving data center AI and AI innovation from a platform level. They're just huge. But there's major players that are up and coming that are also involved, you know, big names like Google and all the other guys to OpenAI. We'll get into some of those. But I'm interested, you know, personally, I take interest in some of the silicon players to watch. And I'll start with an easy one. It's kind of low-lying fruit, let's be honest. But I'm really excited for their opportunity, and that's AMD. For me, you know, when you look at where they've come from, which was basically a silicon competitor versus Intel, a silicon competitor versus NVIDIA, they really, you know, had a tough uphill slog and have methodically, you know, gone through each of those competitive hurdles and really executed. When you look at where they are now versus Intel, for example, in the data center, they are chipping off market share in CPU sockets left and right with EPYC, with their data center CPUs, their processors. You know, I think they're up above a third percentage of the market share, so like 34% market share versus Intel now in data center. And that number is growing. The other place where they're a staunch competitor have been on the gaming graphics side versus NVIDIA is GPUs. And they now have a competitive silicon offering with MI300 series, whether it's the 325, the 350X, the ones they just announced fairly recently. And, you know, those look like compelling solutions from a power and performance efficiency standpoint and performance as well. You know, maybe not Blackwell crushers just yet, but competitive and efficiency competitive as well. But really what AMD is all about these days is pulling that all together in a platform, which is what NVIDIA has done so well from a rack and rack scale solutions offering. And now with the acquisition of ZT Systems, Dr. Lisa Su, CEO of AMD, is very smart. She saw that that was a hole they needed to fill. They needed a platform, solution, a rack scale solution that to really compete with NVIDIA that just wasn't there. They didn't have the engineers. They didn't have the system capability, architecture capability, system architecture. And they now have acquired it. They've acquired thousands of engineers with ZT. They now have architects, system architects, in-house specialists in configuring data centers. And I think if you watch their trajectory in the coming months, and I'm talking, you know, I mean, we're coming up on an earnings call shortly, I think, but in these coming quarters, as the demand is still so intense on NVIDIA and they can't fill all of it, In these coming quarters, I think you're going to start seeing some hockey stick growth from AMD in AI GPUs because they now have rack scale solutions. They have networking with Pensando. I mean, it's kind of all the pieces of the puzzle are finally there.
And so you're right. And they started from, they came from behind in actually addressing AI. They were one of the last players to actually jump in here from a silicon perspective. Matter of fact, they acquired Xilinx to acquire additional expertise to enhance their AI. So I completely agree with you. I think it's the easy one to pick, but I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I took the layup. I must admit, I took the layup. It's cool.
Okay, who else is on your list? Come on.
Well, I'm going to tee this one over to Marco because it was one that Marco had thought of that, you know, I had in the back of my mind, but I really didn't, you know, I didn't think about it from a larger market perspective. But I think Marco Synopsys, right, is one that you think is a good one to watch as
Okay, Marco, take it.
So, you know, Synopsys has been a key player in EDA for, you know, as long as all of us have probably been working in tech. And they're a key, if you look at NVIDIA or AMD, you know, at kind of these total solutions now, it's not just silicon, right? They're addressing the market from basically every angle. Synopsys is now able to do that now as well with the Ansys acquisition. So from everything from EDA to building the chips, to using AI enhanced tools to, you know, optimize the chips before you even prototype anything, to now having full simulation and analysis from start to finish. I think over time, you know, once they fully integrate all of Ansys's tools into their tool chain, we're going to see accelerated time to market, better final outcomes, you know, and ultimately better products from all of these key players like AMD, like NVIDIA, like a few others I'm sure we're going to talk about that leverage these tools to build the foundational tech that powers AI. And this, the post Ansys acquisition, not only is it a ton more talent, but it's a ton more IP sharing. And just the final outcomes are not only going to be better, they're going to be able to achieve them faster, I think.
And we should note that they're not just an EDA vendor and tool vendor, they're also an IP provider. So for a lot of these next generation chips, you know, in terms of DSP technology, in terms of IO technology, they're a key provider there.
Yeah,
absolutely. So just even building some of the blocks that all these chips are going to have just to interconnect with other, you know, devices in a system, you know, Synopsys has that in the portfolio as well. Absolutely.
The other thing that they're really a market leader on, and certainly Cadence, you know, their primary competitor, has dabbled in this as well and has some staunch capabilities there too. But AI-enabled chip and system design and simulation is, you know, a key strength for them as well. They're literally getting AI to now do, you know, place and route, you know, for silicon designs, to work on verification problems, things that is, you know, things that are total grunt work workloads for the average chip engineer or engineering team that now just let the AI chew on it and we'll go, it frees up engineers to go innovate. And so that's important stuff for us moving forward in the semiconductor industry.
Just to make like one more key point. Now this was talked about at their previous Snug event. This is not something that's ready for consumption from their customers, but the company is also working on essentially PhD level agents to help junior engineers with all of this engineering. So when that's all integrated, right? And basically, you know, we all know that the whole industry, it's engineering constrained, right? There's not enough humans to build all the things that everybody wants to build in the timeline they want to build them. But having, you know, deep PhD level AI agents to assist junior engineers, that's huge, right? You're going to find startups that don't have giant engineering teams coming out with chips that compete with some of the bigger guys once all of this integration is done and you have that level of AI agent at your fingertips.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up, Marco, because, you know, one thing that came up at Hot Chips last year was that all these tools are coming out that are AI enabled, that are completely, you know, agentic. However, a lot of the chip companies, especially the traditional chip companies, don't trust them yet. Even the leader NVIDIA didn't trust somebody to do, you know, place and route in terms of, you know, for AI. So it's interesting because I think you will see new companies emerge. They're going to be a little bit more aggressive in using AI. So that's a very, very good point. So Mark, who's top of your list?
You know, one company that I'm quite fond of, and I, you know, full disclosure, I worked for them 10 years ago. So, but I do have an affinity for them. It's a company called Synaptics. Synaptics really they're such a fascinating company. They were fascinating when I worked for them, and they're fascinating now. And what's particularly about interesting, they're not a classic silicon company. Even when they were into the into touchpads, they for years they pretty much invented the touchpad.
They were the touch guys.
They were and they still have a big share. When I was there, they had 80 or 90% share. Now the share has come down a little bit because they've shifted resources to other higher growth businesses. You know, they have really done a very nice job of now starting to pivot toward AI at the edge opportunities. As we all know, the demand for low power edge AI chips is huge. They've got this Astra compute family, which is tailor made for that category. So I think a lot of the tailwinds are kind of lining up for them. They've always had tremendous opportunity in wireless connectivity, Bluetooth with their Broadcom acquisition a couple of years ago. That's been they acquired the wireless portions of the Broadcom portfolio, which has been big for them, and even automotive. I mean, as the automobile category becomes a much more digitized cockpit. They've been playing a leadership role in that area. Now, that's a long life cycle type of business. It takes years and years to kind of get penetration there, but I think there's opportunity there. And I'm frankly, you know, the one area that I'm very, very pleased at, they have a new CEO, Rahul Patel, who's ex-Qualcomm, not a bad pedigree. And he's a product guy. You know, the last couple of CEOs they've had, the last CEO, Michael Hurlston, was a great guy, but he was more of a business operations sales guy. Did a very effective job, I think, of positioning them properly. But Raul, as I think all of you know him, he is a product and technology guy, and I think he'll do wonders, frankly, keeping the ball rolling from an innovation standpoint there. So I'm high on Synaptics.
You know, and I would agree with you, especially because even though they're a newcomer to some of these edge SoCs, they're the only ones out there offering a completely open tools platform for developers. Right. Yeah, everyone else is doing kind of proprietary solutions, and having that open tool set really helps innovate for the rest of the industry.
That's correct.
Okay, so we've covered edge, we've covered EDA, we've covered a data center, at least data center chipsets. Who else? Okay, Dave, we kicked it off with you. Who's next on your list?
You know, for me, there's a lot of opportunity in smaller ecosystem players that are coming along for the ride. And, you know, I think, you know, when you talk about what's required, what some of the building blocks for some of these platforms, you know, there's lots of opportunity here because, you know, for players to watch, because the demand for, you know, more sophisticated systems that, you know, whether it's, you know, an AI data center or edge application, what have you, these systems are pretty, you know, getting pretty complex and doing much more time sensitive and performance sensitive workloads that, you know, need to be set up differently than, you know, what we used to do in the past, because these workloads are very different. There are lots of bandwidth. There's lots of, like I said, critical sort of timing issues. And so Marco and I work with a little company by the name of SciTime. You might not have heard of them, kind of an unsung hero, chip player, if you will, that enables very, precise clock timing solutions in some of these circuits. So for example, they're on NVIDIA's Blackwell platform in a number of areas. But timing is becoming, you know, a technology, sort of a, I don't want to say it like a black magic technology, but it's absolutely evolving as well, because to have all these high-speed processors talking and keeping the network from starving them of bandwidth, and syncing up all the, you know, like, you know, when you have a rack of, I don't know, you know, or a pod of 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 GPUs and host processors all talking over InfiniBand and, you know, high speed Ethernet, you really have a situation where you need, you got traffic cop, chips like DPUs managing the traffic, but you have a lot of high speed networking and timing that needs to be architected into these platforms. Otherwise, you've got some GPU over here or a CPU trying to do its job and it's starved of bandwidth or it's out of sync and you can't get the maximum performance out of the entire system without precise timing. So SiTime builds these MEMS, this microelectronical mechanical switch architecture. We won't get too deep into the weeds on it. Solutions for essentially replacing crystal oscillators and other timing chips in a circuit. The way, crystal, which is an analog technology, has been done for the last 75 years, is now being architected in silicon. And so these solutions are much tighter tolerance. So they don't have jitter and wander. They have much tighter specs versus, quartz oscillator solutions. They have better holdover and accuracy over temperature and vibration and all these different environments that, whether it's a data center or it's, an automotive application. And so they're more resilient and they're tighter tolerance and more precise than ever before. And SiTime, if you look at the stock, I forget what the ticker is. I think it's SITM. It's been going right up with the rest of the AI marketplace as a result of that, because of the demand for these high speed chips. Another good example is at the edge. They also are part of, on your phone, you're communicating with an Uber and that Uber is moving all over the map and the network's out of sync. And, it says it's coming in 3 minutes, but it's really more like 10. That kind of situation is getting resolved with more precise timing. They're all over the place, networking, edge, data center, but I think SiTime could be an interesting one to watch.
Okay. Marco, what about you?
I have to add on to what Dave was saying. So regarding SiTime, I'm sure some of you guys probably felt this way about some of the companies you work with in the past. There's very few companies when we get a technical briefing that I literally drink all the Kool-Aid. It just makes perfect sense. You're talking, lower power, smaller area, more precision, better hold time when there's an outage. Like all of the specs just make sense. And it's seemingly, from a technical standpoint, one of the questions I ask on many of the briefings is, why isn't everybody doing this? Why aren't customers, flooding you with requests? And it's basically friction from moving away from tried and true quartz or established technologies. So that's one of the other reasons that I think, SiTime can have inroads in wireless, in networking, in high-speed chips, basically everywhere. Everything that we use every day is reliant on clocks and frequencies. And their tech, like literally, when you see the specs, it just makes sense. So that's just something also that I just wanted to add to the SiTime.
Well, and MEMS technology isn't new. I mean, it's been around for a couple of decades. We've been using it for all kinds of different applications. So it does make a lot of sense.
And many of their solutions are programmable too. So it's like, even if you have some sort of timing issue, once you have first prototype, you can reprogram it, right? So it's really an interesting company. You have to be a special kind of geek to really fully grasp it, which what most of us are. So it's great that we're talking about them. But yeah, I really like that company. And I like the people. They're great communicators and it's just interesting tech. But I'm going to go completely other direction. Ready?
Good. Let's go.
So if we go sort of mass market, right, what company has the potential to just have AI in everybody's hands every day and they don't even realize it, right, where they're going to remove all the friction and you're going to use AI without even knowing it? And that's Microsoft. I have to qualify that I, over the years, am typically pulling for Microsoft, but no other company squanders great opportunity like they do. Like, I don't mean that as it is. They've had so many opportunities to do huge things and just, conquer markets, and somehow they don't pull it off. But for AI,
you just have to wait till the next generation.
Exactly. I'm actually
Can you say Skype?
Google's a little famous for that too.
Yeah. You know what? I say that because I want them to succeed, right? So it's maybe a little bit of personal bias in there, and I'm just having fun with you guys. But You know, I'm a fan of Copilot so far, right? I use it basically every day to help with images, to help with headline optimization, to summarize documents. And most people are using Teams and have, you know, GPUs or NPUs in their systems, and they're getting the nice blurry backgrounds. And it's just sort of coming together where it's not that I have an agent to help me. I guess I technically Copilot's an agent, but it just sort of works. It's not the fastest all the time, but it's getting to the point where, you know, if perhaps they do some Office integration, they clean up the Windows integration, they, you know, increase capacity on the cloud, and we get more powerful NPUs next gen with Copilot Plus PCs, I think that could potentially open more eyes and for people to be more accepting of AI in their daily life.
Yeah.
Do you think they can overcome kind of the wave that we've seen with OpenAI? I mean, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I use Perplexity and I use ChatGPT more than I use Copilot. So do you think they can overcome that?
I think OpenAI has the momentum. Can I say something that probably won't be
popular? Well, and Google, all you have to do is do a Google search and you get Gemini. So,
right, that's true. I think they can, right? Because Windows is so ubiquitous for people that are actually getting real work done. And I'm not a huge fan of what OpenAI did, kind of pivoting from a nonprofit to a for-profit. It just, the whole philosophy changed. There's been some churn there. We'll see if they can maintain their momentum. But I just think the ubiquitous nature of Windows is for people working, right? I know lots of people think they can work from their phone or from a tablet, but those are folks that really like just doing email and simple documents. I don't think you're doing heavy lifting on a phone or a tablet. For folks that are doing heavy lifting and you need something, you know, you need a full PC in front of you, Microsoft, I think, can overcome some of the challenges and, you know, perhaps not be a leader, but be pervasive, you know, across the industry.
You know,
well, and having the rest of the software stack definitely gives them an advantage there. I would agree.
Yeah,
if you think about how well that company has done since Satya Nadella took over, just kicking butt, you know, you have to hand it to them. They've really turned it around. That the stock has gone up and to the right. They're making great headway. So
they've invested heavily, not just in their own technology, but also in hardware technology, but also in NVIDIA GPUs. They have one of the largest caches there in terms of the hyperscalers. So I would position pretty highly too.
Azure. Yeah, absolutely. Jim, you know, you've been getting off easy here asking us all the questions. What about you?
I'm not done yet. We got to go to Mark. I'll wait for the lightning round.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Just real quickly, it's that small company you just mentioned a few moments ago, guys, and that's OpenAI. I just think that right now it's the sky's the limit. I mean, putting the whole, are they a for-profit company, a nonprofit company, putting that kind of aside, which I think some people like us did kind of struggle with a bit. They've got a number of tailwinds. I mean, I think that the whole generative AI space is a baseball game, we're in the second inning. I mean, and you look at their enterprise deployments, their partnerships vis-a-vis with Microsoft. Of course, that's a little bit frothy, but putting that aside, that exclusive arrangement they have with Apple right now, because Apple has struggled so mightily with Apple Intelligence, I think is a big deal. The model licensing opportunity for them, I think, is huge. And first and foremost, I think the other thing that really strikes me, and they're now starting to get into it because they've now evolved their platform to embrace e-commerce. Once e-commerce gets baked into the whole AI pie, that is going to be a big, big deal. When you're able to use an AI agent that makes sophisticated purchases with a prompt in a very secure, you know, highly stable way, that to me, I hate people who have to use the phrase game changer, but that will be a game changer. So I'm very high on OpenAI, and I, again, like Marco said, I wish they would decide, are they for profit? Are they anti-profit? But I look at the tailwinds. I think they're a company you got to keep your eyes on.
Totally agreed.
Okay, guys, you know, I've taken a look at this, and, you know, I kind of look for the unsung heroes. I look for the guys, you know, that are behind the scenes you don't really think about. You know, one of the ones that comes to mind is Micron. Just the fact that you need memory, and you don't have AI without data. And really, that whole data pipe is the memory pipe. Matter of fact, we've seen Micron go from being a very, very, very distant third with HBM memory to being second place with in less than a year, being qualified with HBM3E on both AMD and NVIDIA platforms, and now supposedly already have HBM4 ready to go for the Rubin platform starting early next year for NVIDIA. And it's not just the memory. It's also having the storage solutions, you know, having a complete stack of solutions for that entire data plane. So that's one. But I think even beyond that, so what do you guys think? Is Micron one?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think when you're talking about feeding the beast, right, the AI beast, you need tons of memory and tons of storage. And that's, I mean, Micron's just going to mop that up. You know, they used to play second fiddle to Samsung and Hynix, and now they're not anymore. They're all booked out with NVIDIA for HBM. So, yeah, right on.
Well, and I, just expanding on that, I think there's a huge opportunity in the data storage market. So companies like Snowflake and Oracle, I think they're both positioned very well. You know, they already kind of are, you know, Snowflake is that data service provider, and Oracle has always been that data service provider as that, you know, database solution as well. So I think they're very well positioned. But even beyond that, I think the whole infrastructure area is an interesting one. Companies like Flex and Vertiv that provide an entire vertical stack of solutions for data center construction. SMRs. I'm excited about SMRs, small modular reactors, because let's face it, we're getting to a point where we're running out of power for these data centers.
Crazy. It is a crazy market. Yeah.
The first one, I think there's going to be a lot of them, but the first one out of the gate is NuScale. So I'm excited about them. Especially as we start having these political tensions, we're starting to see a lot of concern about rare earth materials that go into some of these products. So companies, you know, there's one that stands out there that's trying to take on the Chinese conglomerate, and that's MP Materials. So I think that's an exciting area. And even beyond that, I think just, you know, seeing all these companies that kind of come together. Anybody else throughout the ecosystem? Let's do a quick lightning round. Real quick.
I need to build on what you were just saying. Two other things to consider, right? When you're talking about data center storage, you have to manage the data, but you also need the silicon to store it on, right? So I think Kioxia just announced a 245 terabyte PCIe 5 SSD, like monster storage in a U.2. And I think it's, I'm forgetting the second form factor they had, but standard SSDs with monster storage. And then there's also like a company like Phison, who's really like unsung, but they're basically building all the controllers for almost everybody now. And they're the highest performing controllers as well, typically. So, and they're making a play this year into data center storage. So Phison, I think, is another adjacent player to kind of consider.
So let's face it, you know, there are probably hundreds of companies we should be watching that are going to benefit and actually enable the AI wave. So, you know, real quick, let's go through and see how many companies we can name really quick. Mark, who else?
I would list, believe it or not, I know it's not sexy, but I would limit Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Dave?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go a little bit different direction. I'm going to give you two companies, and I'm going to take it from an angle of disruptors. So they're doing things in markets.
Okay, this is lightning round. Come
on. I'm going quick. They're disruptors in markets that are in AI or adjacent to AI, and that's anybody doing RISC-V these days, whether you think of Sci-5 or TensTorrent, for example. And then Qualcomm, who is doing the alternative to the x86 on the PC platform on the AI PCs. Qualcomm is set for explosive growth in the next gen. Watch the RISC-V market. I think that's a big one too.
Marco?
Yeah, I'm going to, so Dave stole TensTorrent from me, but I'm going to say Cerebras is a, you know, wild wafer scale solutions. In the same vein as Micron, I think you have to look at SK Hynix, and somebody's got to build all this stuff. So TSMC.
You know, I'm also going to throw Supermicro out there. I think that they are an underrated OEM that is willing to do anything in terms of customization and everything else. And I think we're going to see a huge change in terms of the way servers are architected. Anybody else we're missing, guys?
Yes. And maybe we should wrap on this, because we all should offer our opinions on it. And this is a big one, Intel, right? We haven't mentioned Intel. Like, far be it for us to forget Intel. That, you know, we used to call it Chipzilla back in the day, and how far they have fallen, unfortunately. But they're putting the pieces back together. Lip-Bu-Tan is, you know, the new CEO. He's making some hard decisions, cutting workforce. They have been bloated, let's face it, for a long time in that regard. But they're making some tough decisions. What do you think about Intel Foundry, Intel devices and chips, I should say? So, you know, the client division, PCs. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because I think where Lip-Bu is the same place that Paul Otellini was when he took over.
Yeah.
Intel was behind the curve. AMD was first out of the gate with support from Microsoft for 64-bit. They had made some huge bets in other areas like communications, where they had bought over a dozen companies to compete in that segment and everything else. And Paul brought them back to their core competencies and said, okay, we're going to focus on this. We're going to excel in this. And everything else kind of goes away. You know, that worked, and it worked very successfully. It kind of limited some of their growth TAM opportunities, you know, beyond in the long term, but it definitely brought Intel back to the forefront. And let's face it, you know, up until the past couple of years, Intel was the monopoly for the data center when it came to host processors. So I think that's good. Still concerned about AI. They really need a hard AI strategy if they're going to compete. What do you guys think?
Gaudi's good stuff, but yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they're still going to power, you know, even if AMD continues their trajectory in data center, right, and they get to 50% share, 50% of the host processing will likely still be Intel, right? So they're not going away, but they need that massively parallel, easy to produce GPU type accelerator solution. Ponte Vecchio was like a really, really cool tech, but that's not going for everybody, right? So if they can pull off, they, you know what, I should also mention, they also have a really good software stack, right? So they're not starting from zero. If they can build that massively parallel chip, we'll see.
And I would just say that if we were having this podcast back in 2015 versus 2025, and if I had told you in 2015, AMD and Intel will essentially have reversed positions. And that's a testament to Lisa Su and the remarkable work she's done, because those of us who have been, you know, associated with AMD in various capacities, I mean, they were the gang that couldn't shoot straight, and they have really turned things around. And I say that when I was on the other side of the farm, when I was a vendor and buying chips from Intel and AMD. But, I would like to see Intel succeed. They are one of the great American companies. They've made so many different snafus, disconnects, whatever kind of polite word you want to wrap around it, in terms of business categories that they've missed, whether it was smartphones, going back to MP3 players, anything that required a small SoC type of capability. So I'm not going to write their epitaph. But they got to get into a position where they're going to have to show some progress. I mean, we all know that in the Bay Area, they're starting to cut jobs in a pretty significant way. I think they still have a lot more areas to go in terms of getting that bloatation reputation. That's a word. I don't think that's a word, bloatation, reduced. But they need an AI story. And I think right now, it's still a work in progress.
Well, and let's not forget that Intel's core competencies fall in three areas. One is the IA processor architecture. One is research and development, where they've pretty much led the industry in so many ways. And the other one is in manufacturing and process technology, you know, and that includes process, packaging, everything. And they are still a key player there. So those two last areas could play a significant role in, where they end up in two, three, four, even 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the momentum that started with the CHIPS Act that seemed like, you know, Gelsinger was lined up to really, you know, teed up to really hit a good long drive with.
It was a lifeline. It was a lifeline.
Yeah, you know, that momentum should come back, because we do want major leagues, stateside fabs. We do need them in the U.S. And Intel is an American company. It's not like, I mean, certainly TSMC building fabs here is wonderful, and Samsung and all the development here stateside, but Intel, the American company, the US company, Intel actually coming back to, as you noted, Jim, manufacturing prowess that it had in days of old, that has to happen.
Well, and we're going to be talking about that in a future podcast, so I don't want to go too deep there. We're going to be in this whole foundry situation that's in constant change right now, but definitely a huge area. Yeah. You know, in this AI era, obviously, you know, this may be a quarterly or even monthly podcast for us because it's changing so rapidly. I want to really encourage everyone to keep up with us on this because, you know, we're still learning how to learn. You know, and the industry is changing so rapidly. I mean, this is the key aspect that's going on in our industry. And, you know, who we call out today may not be the companies we call out tomorrow. So please stay tuned and continue to join all of us as we go down this AI road.
And hit thumbs up, like, and subscribe where you can find us on the web. Tech Stack, that's the podcast. The Technologist, that's us. And we thank you for stopping by, right, fellas?
Yes. Thank you for joining us today. And please look for future podcasts and definitely tune in as much as you possibly can and follow us on social media, you know, whether that's through X, through LinkedIn, through Mastodon, Blue Sky, whatever. Just look for us everywhere.
Yeah.